Next man up, 102.5, The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly with you. Heard this one blaring through the speakers at First Bank Stadium after Vanderbilt beat LSU 31-24 on Saturday. Moves to 6-1, now top 10 in the country. Number 15, Missouri, coming to town this weekend. College game day coming to our city this weekend. And now we go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Voice of Vanderbilt football, Andrew Allegretta, is on the line for his weekly visit. Andrew, as always, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you taking some time.
What's going on?
Not a ton. We are excited for this weekend. I mean, tons of hype around the program right now, and a lot of it stems from that game on Saturday. Last week, Andrew, when you were on, we asked you about Vandy getting back to its roots and to its identity, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And it seems like they did that. They put up 31 points, the most LSU has allowed all year. How impressive was it after some of the self-inflicted wounds against Alabama to come out and pretty much execute the game plan to perfection against LSU on Saturday?
I mean, I think a lot of what Vanderbilt has been able to do throughout the course of 2025 has been pretty impressive. I mean, I think the bye week certainly helps. I think specifically for the game, Jake, like you talked about, the fact that LSU's defense is for real. Like, that is a legitimate defense. Whether or not they can elevate themselves to be, you know, a college football playoff team, I don't know. But that defensive side of the ball with Blake Baker is darn good. And like you said, 31 points, the most that Ole Miss, LSU has given up throughout the course of the season, topping 24 from Ole Miss. The fact that it was, 14 points, I think, in the second half for Vanderbilt against a defense that was giving up 4.5 points in the second half throughout the course of the season. All of it very, very impressive offensively. And certainly that was huge for Vanderbilt to kind of set the tone offensively the way that they did.
We've talked plenty about how much talent has been added to this team, especially on the offensive line. But, you know, I mentioned on the show this week, you and Norm were talking up in the booth of Diego's the straw that stirs the drink, but you still have to have a drink. Diego, that 4th-and-1 play against LSU that kind of set up the game-clinching touchdown, what he does on the field takes Vanderbilt from a really good team to a dangerous team in terms of college football playoff implications. How cool is it to see the plays that he makes that really just turns nothing into something and puts Vanderbilt in these positions where they can be a top 10 team this late in the year?
Have you started to see the billboards around Nashville? I saw one driving home last night on Friday. The two-turnt Heisman campaign,
yes,
I guess, is officially underway for Diego Pavia, which is wild. Like, not so much that Vanderbilt has a football player that is getting attention for the Heisman Trophy, which I think he certainly well deserves. It's wild for me to see so many different, like, top quarterbacks in college football, and like the range of where Diego falls on that. We're this far into the Diego Pavia experience, and people are still doing like the "I don't know about Diego" thing or whatever. That's kind of trippy to me. It's, you know, it's like what Norm said on the broadcast. How do you defend somebody that doesn't know what he's going to do? Like, what can you possibly do for that? You know, whether it's just kind of shaking loose of Pyburn, I still think his touchdown run, in which, look, he got good blocking, and I think it was Bryce Henderson that kind of picked up a late rush, but Diego's blindside feel on his touchdown run was silly. Like, there's a lot of quarterbacks that would be tunnel vision down the field that would just, you know, not see it, get clobbered, whatever. He sensed it at the exact right moment, took off and scored the touchdown. We talked with Clark about his football IQ, and Heisman Trophy doesn't have to just be about throwing for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns. Like, there's a lot of things that make a great quarterback, and one of them is football IQ. Like, yes, did Vanderbilt talk about the first down, get down, slide down at the 2 sort of thing in the huddle during the timeout? Of course they did, but Clark talked on Monday about maybe no quarterback that he has ever been around has taken conversations in the meeting room to the playing field the way that Diego Pavia does, especially from a situational football perspective. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that make a great quarterback. Shaking loose from Pyburn, the first down, get down, all of that to me certainly warrants what we're doing at the moment with the two-turn Heisman campaign that's starting to kind of get its wheels going and hopefully continues versus Missouri.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your elevator pitch would be for him to get the Heisman, but you kind of just did that. But one other thing I think is huge in this is just the way he's impacted the culture and the way it seems like everybody on that team is like, yo, we got a chance to win because we got two in the backfield. How much can you like express that and put that into words from your perspective, what you've seen?
Man, it's a good question, TD. Candidly, I feel probably not the best to answer that question. In part because, you know, I don't get to sit there and get inside the brain of, you know, someone that's been in the program for a long time. And Clark talks about early adapters of the program like Langston Patterson and all of that sort of stuff. I mean, I think we all just feel it with Diego. And it's real. I mean, I think the thing that I've said a long time about Diego is that all of this stuff, you know, whether at SEC Media Days, he's talking about, I didn't come back to go 7-6. And he's on Feinbaum, and Feinbaum chuckles about the national championship. And Diego says, I'm not cracking a joke. That's the standard. We use that line in our play-by-play open as well for our broadcasts. It's all real. There's a lot of people that want to be leaders. There's a lot of people that try to be leaders. And it's not so much that they aren't leaders. It's that it's hard to find your voice in that space, a voice that is authentically yours. And, you know, I told Diego at one point that I loved what he said in the Netflix doc. As much as that's Hollywood, I love the fact that he said, you know, as much as he heard when he first got here, like, it's Vanderbilt, this game's winnable, that game's not winnable. He said, that's not me. Every game's winnable. I was like, that was such an impressive full confidence thing to say. He's like, that's real. It's 100% real. And with Diego, it is. I think that's the thing that transcends all of it to me, is everything he does is very genuine and authentic to himself. He believes it to his core, and nothing that he's doing is a put on.
Tell me a little bit about the dual threat ability, because I think that's something that's underrated. I mean, he's one of five quarterbacks with more than 1,500 passing yards and more than 400 rushing yards this season. And we're talking about guys like Taylen Green in that mention. So it's clear he's a guy that could do it both, running and passing the ball.
I mean, I think Clark kind of touched on it a little bit. You know, whatever the rushing statistics TD were versus LSU, a lot of it was designed, and they did a good job. Even when Cedric Alexander had to miss some plays, like MK Young rips off the big run, like, we don't have the Diego Pavia third down and seven quarterback draw, first down, get down to win the game with 2 minutes left if it's not for the chunk play that MK picks up. Having said all of that, Clark talked about the fact that there are designed pass plays that Diego does a great job and takes off and runs. And it's right back to the whole thing about it's so hard to know how to defend him because you can't really plan a true structure for Diego. A lot of people would talk about throwing a spy against him. And okay, you can spy him. That's fine. But he's elevated himself, I think, about 70-75% completion percentage this year, where if you're going to spy him and you're going to play in zone defense, there's a decent chance that he's going to find the windows this season, especially with the offensive line that we got. Okay, you don't want to spy him. You want to be man coverage. You want to try to get pressure. Well, great. He's going to feel the rush like he did on the 21-yard touchdown rush. He's going to step up and he's going to go. It's not that he's unstoppable. Like, he's a very super, super talented quarterback. I think his athleticism gets overlooked as we talk about leadership a lot. But, you know, there have been teams to slow him down. But it is really ultra challenging if you're going to be a defensive coordinator and say, what do we dial up? It's not like there's a structure that you can dial up that fits defending Diego Pavia. You need ultra talented people making instinctual plays defensively to slow him down. I think that's probably what you're getting at with the dual threat and the fact that he's so perfectly unpredictable.
Andrew Allegretta from Vanderbilt Football is with us. Andrew, quickly to the defensive side of the ball. We talk about Diego being the straw that stirs the drink for the Commodores. Ahmad Hardy is the straw that stirs the drink for Missouri. How do you see this Vanderbilt defense being able to slow down the rushing attack of Hardy and the Tigers?
I mean, it's going to be hard. We talked about it with Clark on the Commodore Hour 2 back on Monday. To me, the comp with Missouri's rushing attack, perhaps through my own narrow perspective of going to Syracuse, is the fact that, you know, Jim Boeheim ran the 2-3 zone for all of those years. Like, why was Syracuse's 2-3 zone better than everybody else's? Well, it's because they practiced it all of the time when other people just kind of used it as a variation on their defense, and they recruited to it. Well, the same thing is true for Missouri. They've got this really great outside zone stretch run play that Eli Drinkwitz has made part of his identity for years, going back being the offensive coordinator at NC State, and they recruit to it. They get the right running backs, whether it was Noel from a couple of years ago or it's Hardy this year. Like, they always have a really good back that can run this outside zone stretch and then puncture north and south, and they've got the perfect players for it. So it's really difficult. The hope is, in talking with Steve Gregory, the defensive coordinator, what we have seen versus Auburn and Alabama has been a real intentionality to be physical at the line of scrimmage with the running backs and with the offensive line. And it has, to some extent, slowed down Hardy the past couple of weeks after, I think it was 4 or 5 straight games to start off the season at 100 yards, plus like a 200-yard performance in one of his games. He's been about 50 yards per game versus Bama and Auburn. So there have been some signs of sluggishness. I don't know that that's going to continue, but Steve Gregory emphasized the physicality at the line of scrimmage against that front for Missouri. And now it's just up to those guys defensively to get the job done.
Andrew, before we let you get out of here, College Game Day is coming to town, and everybody has a take. Who is going to be the guest picker? We should find out maybe today, maybe tomorrow, who's going to be coming in. Who do you think should be the guest picker for the Commodores on Saturday?
TD. Do you want to do it, TD?
Man, I would love to do it, but I will be en route to Indianapolis.
Right.
And you know what's going to be on my mind? That shrimp cocktail and ribeye at St. Elmo's,
yep.
Man. I'm sorry, but, you know.
We can do the first ever phone call celebrity guest.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Voice of Teron Davenport.
I have no idea, guys. I've got no earthly idea who the guest picker is. I know there's PTSD for Vandy fans with 2008 when Kenny Chesney did it.
Yep.
So as long as we don't fall into that category, I think I'm cool.
You would want Bargatze?
I mean, if Nate can do it, yeah, of course.
Okay. Nate's
fantastic. I think that's who it's going to be.
You think it's going to be? I mean, I don't. Honestly, I don't. I have no idea, and this is not meant to be like facetious. As long as we don't fall into like Kenny Chesney / I guess Morgan Wallen would be the current equivalency.
Then
I'm cool.
They had Jelly Roll on last week, right. So I guess that negates him for here, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. Honestly, I got no idea. I mean, I'd be cool with Nate. I mean, Dirks is a Vanderbilt guy, Bentley, so I'd be cool with Dirks if you wanted to do it. I don't know. Again, as long as we're not doing Morgan Wallen, Kenny Chesney, like Kelsey Ballerini, who fly the orange team,
right.
I'm cool.
Yeah, the Vandy pimp from SEC Shorts said he's going to be on College Game Day, but not as the guest picker. So there you go. Take him out of the running. Andrew, as always, appreciate you coming on. Can't wait to see you up there in the booth on Saturday and hoping for another big win.
Yes, sir. Talk to you guys soon.
Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football. You can listen in to Andrew, Norman Jordan, Kevin Ingram starting at 1 p.m. on 102.5. The game with kickoff against Missouri set for 2:30. We got one more segment on this Thursday. We'll wrap up the show after this. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.